and welcome to the BOAG World Show, the longest running web design podcast where we look at everything from user experience design to conversion rate optimization and working in the web. On the last show of 2024, Marcus, can you believe that we're already at the end of the year in what, middle of November when we're recording this?
when I was writing my notes, I thought, oh, this must be Christmas.
Yes, we have to pretend. I am
wearing a virtual Christmas hat and jumper.
Yes, we're pretending to be Christmassy in this episode. Anyway, in the last show of 2024, we look ahead and ask what 2025 has in store. Do you say 2025 or do you say 2025? No, that's the same thing.
That's the same thing, Paul. Or 2025.
Yes, that's the, Do you see what I mean?
No, 2025.
Yeah, it's quicker, isn't it? Anyway, my name, if you haven't already worked that out, is Paul Boag. And joining me, as always, is Marcus Lillington. Hello, Marcus.
Good morning, Paul, back in the UK, Paul. Is it not good?
Well, actually, we did.
I thought you were looking forward to it.
I was, but I'm very fickle like that. I'm back and it's now grey and wet and miserable. Although we've had snow, which has been nice.
It's really not grey and miserable. There is not a cloud in the sky out the window. It's perfectly blue.
Actually, you're right. It is here as well. But it has been. I'm talking historically in the time of, oh, I don't know, leave me alone.
I mean, yes, but was it Woody Allen, the film director, used to come to the UK to film his films because he liked the grey sky backdrop?
Who does that? That's the... I mean, he was a weird guy, so, you know, that makes sense, I guess.
Yes.
So what are you getting? Yeah,
I have nothing else to add on that subject.
No, there's nothing much else to say.
What am I getting for Christmas?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Yeah.
I've already got a present.
Oh, what have you got?
It's a really nice coat, actually, which I know has nothing to do with the podcast, but I don't know. It's kind of like tech coat, but it's my dog walking coat. It's a 100% waterproof, warm, loads of pockets, or silent, so I could go hunting deer in it if I wanted to.
Are you intending to go hunting deer?
No. It's a ridgeline. There you go. So
I know.
To look at that.
Yes. No, I know what ridgeline are. Believe it or not, I am aware of outside coats because of the time when we're in America. Obviously, we do a lot of outdoorsy stuff, so it's always good to have good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm well pleased with that. And that has already arrived because winter arrived. I've also asked for, again, nothing to do with the podcast, a really nice cooking knife. I'm going to go for a global Japanese make.
All of these things are basically boys with toys. I've decided...
Totally.
We are incredible as a gender that we never really grow out of toys, do we? If you look at, like, whatever hobby a man has associated with it an enormous number of toys, right?
Gadgets.
So you're into music, so you've got your guitars and your amps and your blah, 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 blah. Goes on forever. If you're into photography, you've got all these kind of cameras and stuff. Even if you're into hunting, like in America, obviously hunting is big in America. And just seeing these guys walk around with these like ridiculous outfits of camouflage and, you know, all of this kind of shit. It's all boys with toys.
It's playing camps, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what that is. But yeah, absolutely. I have probably, I don't know, a dozen kitchen knives, but none of them are good enough.
Exactly.
I want a proper one.
Yeah.
I want an expensive one, please.
Absolutely.
Get me an expensive one.
Yes.
And well, Paul, so what are you going to get for Christmas, or what have you already bought yourself for Christmas?
Well, I bought the new Apple Watch, but in my defense, that's only because I lost the last one.
Lost it.
No, I really did. I was coming back home when we went through security. I just left it in the tray, right?
And it was. I used the words again. Lost it. I just left it in the tray. I don't want you anymore.
Well, here's the thing, right? So I left it in the tray. I immediately looked for the Find My, because you could do Find My, which is great. So I knew it was in security. I knew exactly where it was. I went back there and asked, and they couldn't find it. It's not like I could start poking around in security to find it.
Well, my air quotes are doing a lot of work this morning. They couldn't find it.
No, I'm sorry.
Not you. No, they're them that somebody stole.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But then I get an email like 2 hours later because I gave them my details. So, we found it now.
Oh, right.
By this stage, I'm on the plane, right?
I take it, Mac.
And they're going to charge me $190 to send it to me, right? I looked up on eBay, because it's an old Apple Watch. It was only worth about $90. So it was like, so I didn't. I just bought a new shiny one instead.
Well, I was waxing lyrical about Michelle's new one a few shows ago.
Yes, you were, weren't you? Yeah.
She's got the gold one. Yours is the fancy one too, by the looks of it.
It's the cheap one. It's the cheapest.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she went for the super fancy schmancy titanium one.
Oh, my word.
No, it's gold. It's gold. Ooh. But what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
What's it? She keeps saying, I need to learn more about my watch. What do you use your watch for, Paul? And don't say telling the time. Well, that'd be quite funny.
That is the main thing that I do use it for. What do I use it for? Well, obviously, I don't use it for activity tracking because,
fair enough.
You know, it's me. I do use it for when we go hiking. You're not allowed to say walking, right?
Walking is fine.
No, you've got to hike. You're hiking and you need gear and sticks and shit.
Another example of pointless gear.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Sticks.
So I use it. There's a great app called All Trails, which is really good for walking routes. And that goes on the watch, which is quite nice. So I use it for that. I use it, obviously, for notifications. And sleep is the big one because, obviously, I'm sure I've moaned over the years about how terribly I sleep. So I like to know how bad I sleep. And I like to have a nice graph that I can show to my wife to prove that I don't sleep very well, which she is totally unimpressed. But yeah.
I mean, I just couldn't wear it in bed. It'd drive me insane.
Oh, right.
But she's really got into it in the same way. And it's, I'm not sure how healthy it is knowing that you haven't had a good night's sleep.
I'm not sure either. No. But what I do like... I use an app called Rise, and what that will do is wake me up very gently. So it will detect the part of my sleep. So let's say I wanted to get up at 9, it would monitor between about 8:30 and 9 to see when I'm the most awake, and then it just taps me on the wrist. And it'll tap me increasingly more aggressively until I wake up. And if it hits 9, it's then all the sirens go off and stuff. But it's a much nicer way to wake up. Yeah. And being gently caressed by my Apple Watch. I like that.
I didn't know it did that. There you go.
Yeah, that's quite nice. I like that.
Time to move on, I think.
Yes, definitely. Should we just talk about apps instead? Let's talk about cool apps. So I've got three apps of the week to talk about, right?
Yes.
App number one for you is, because I always like to give people cool apps to check out, is called Kria, right? Which I'm pretty sure is one of the aliens in the MCU, the Kree. But it's got an A on it. Oh, yeah, anyway, that was a bad joke. But you've just looked at me blankly because you have a life. So
I'm not quite so much of a nerd as you are.
No, I'll move on. just get my coat and leave. Anyway, Kria is built on a generative AI engine called Flux, which is by far the best engine out there at the moment. Well, not by far. Midjourney's pretty close behind it. But I just bloody love it, Marcus. So whenever... Because a big part of what I do is conversion rate optimization. I do a lot of landing pages and we want to, you know. And so it's really important on those pages to get people to look where you want them to look, right?
Yep.
And the minute you add an image to the page, it's like this kind of huge drawer of people's attention. They always look at images. So it's really important that the image is exactly how you want it. So, for example, let's say you had some text on the left that was like your hero image. So you've got your text on the left, which is your value proposition. Then you've got your call to action under it, that kind of thing. And on the right, you have an image. You want to make sure that whatever's in that right hand side is looking at the call to action to draw attention across it.
But you're pointing at it.
Yeah, preferably going, click on this, you dummy. But it used to take me hours going through stock libraries to get this kind of thing. But now with generative AI, you can just describe exactly what you want and then have it looking, you know, say, I want you to look exactly in this direction. And it's just brilliant. And I love Kria particularly for this because it's very good at what they call prompt adherence. In other words, it will actually do what you tell it to do, which is really, really important because if you can't get people to look where you want them to look, it's no good. So definitely check that out. It's K-R-E-A, I think it's .com. Let me just check that. No, it's .ai. So, yeah, check that out.
I went and had a look at it.
Yeah.
And... I still have, and this is quite interesting. I'm going to talk about it now because as I was going through the show notes, I looked at this first and I thought AI images still weird me out. And the images that were chosen for the homepage of Kria, you'd think they would be the most well, you know, sort of fine detailed or whatever to make them look as best they can, but they still look like AI images. I then later in the notes looked at, and I'm jumping down to a good read, the first read, which we'll come to later. And they meant there's a point in there where I can't remember how it comes about, but the writer says that there's an uncanny valley aspect to humans dealing with AI generally.
Yes.
And that's what I think is my issue with images, AI generated images. It just makes it's, there's something in the back of my brain that's going, that ain't right.
Yeah, there are two ways you can address that problem because you're 100% right and 100% agree. Way number one is if you need photorealistic stuff, right, that doesn't trigger that uncanny valley, because by default these platforms, I think, over polish the images. They all look a little bit too perfect. There's not enough imperfections in them. If you add, it's about your prompt there, right? Mm. So you type in whatever it is that you want, but then add on to the end of that things like iPhone photography or even, you know, the file formats you get with whenever you're off your digital camera, like IMG, a series of numbers. If you put in that, suddenly the photographs look much, much more realistic, much more like stuff that you wouldn't know is AI. Now, you still got to work out, you've got to keep an eye out for the imperfections, things like too many teeth or an extra finger or whatever, which can sometimes ruin it. But just simply by saying, you can also specify the lens that's used, the film stock that's used, all that kind of stuff can make these things much, much more realistic. And then the other alternative, which is the one that I've used for my own website, is to go, okay, let's not try and do realistic photography because it's harder work. Let's go for illustration instead, right? Mm. And so if you go for illustration, suddenly that problem goes away and you'd never know, you know? So it's only when you're trying to be super photorealistic that it begins, you get into that uncanny valley thing.
I still get it with illustrations generated by AI as well.
Really?
Yes. Something's not right. And I think it's just, you know, lizard brain stuff going on.
Yeah. I do know what you
mean. But it was interesting to read it about that and see that it's not just me.
No, it's absolutely not. No, I would agree. Yeah. I don't get it as much with illustrations. I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean. But that's only going to improve over time, you know. Exactly, I was thinking about Simon Willison. Do you remember Simon Willison?
Yeah.
I follow him, this was years back. He started getting really excited on social media about, there's this app now called DALL-E that produces images, and he posted these images, and they looked awful. And I was like, why are you excited about this? You know, it's shit. But now I get it, you know. So I think that, again, looking ahead to 2025, I think we'll see further jumps in that. So anyway, that's Kriya. The next one I wanted to mention to you was a UX and UI design tips website that I came across. Let's see what the... It's called uidesign.tips is the URL. And it's just a great collection of design UI elements, right? So with advice about how to do, say, a social login, or how to better design menus, or how to create a good modal, and all of that kind of stuff. And it's just whatever element you're creating, you can just go to this website, find the element, and just look up good advice about how to do it. And my immediate reaction when I saw it is, oh, yes, I'll mention that on the podcast, but it's not for me because I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't need a website to tell me how to do this stuff. But you know what? It's actually really useful because it's amazing. I don't know how to put it. You almost forget, right? You're not paying attention to each individual element that you're creating. So you kind of go, oh, that'll do. But if you just take a moment to look at the equivalent on that website, you go, oh, no, I haven't done so-and-so, you know? And it's not that it's teaching me anything new, but it's reminding me to do what I know, if yeah. that makes sense.
Cool.
So I like that one. That was a good one.
I just went, okay, when I looked at that one. Okay.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing for you in that one, Marcus.
I share it internally.
Yeah. And then the other one is in a similar line. It's if you're even more lazy. Which is the universe. It's called UIverse. Yeah. So it's UIverse.io. And it's basically a massive repository of UI elements, open source UI elements that you can literally just steal. Right.
And reuse. Now,
reuse. Yeah. This, I think, is a particularly good one for developers out there, right? Because it's got code for all of this stuff as well. And if you don't have a designer, because let's be honest, right? Not every project has a designer associated with it. And you'll find some, you know, pre-done design elements that you might want to use rather than creating them from scratch, you know. Yeah. So check that one out. That's a really good one as well. So.
Very
three
helpful,
great
Paul.
Apps.
Very helpful.
I thought so. I was impressed by my own genius there coming up with those. In fact, I think, to be honest, two out of the three just came off of an Instagram reel that I happened to randomly see. And I thought, oh, yes. I could use that for the podcast.
But now your true genius is going to come out because we're going to talk about next year.
Yeah, I'm going to predict the future.
You've got a crystal ball?
No, I'm just so incredibly wise that... that I can see what's coming.
Okay.
And I completely guarantee every single one of these things will happen just as I predict them.
And that's fine. You're absolutely right. Paul, whatever Paul says is going to happen because no one is going to go back and check this.
Nobody ever gets predictions about the future wrong, you see. It's just one of those things that you can be sure of. Do you know, I nearly did it. The reason that this came about, the reason I decided to do this, is because... I got so fed up. I was looking through various things, as I do, to try and keep on top of things. And I saw a whole series of, like, predictions about 2025, because it's that time of year where these things come up.
And, yeah.
And every single one of them, I thought, oh, this is such bollocks. You know, people say this every year. Every year it's going to be this, that, and the other. Next year is going to be the year for accessibility or the year for personalization or whatever else.
There's a little bit of the, you know, like the tabloid newspapers saying 100 days of snow. And it's normally about now or like a couple of weeks ago. Every year. And it's basically to sell newspapers or to get clicks. And one day they'll be right.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
And also, no one ever really goes back and points the finger and goes, you said that. It's just like, it's almost like become part of kind of, you know, I can't find the right
culture.
Yes, it's a cultural thing now. It's like, it's a shame if they didn't do it. you know.
Yeah, it's yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. So I'm going to have a go at it, yes, because excellent. Everybody else does it. So why can't I? So prediction number one is AI interfaces, right? So we are, every new piece of technology goes through a similar cycle, okay? And the cycle it goes through is, first of all, everybody's just impressed that it's there, right?
Yep.
Oh, wow. So MP3 players, I remember when those things came along, right? Oh, wow. You know, I can carry music around in my pocket. Just blew us away. And it was clunky to use, and it was difficult to transfer stuff onto it, and it was a pain in the ass, but it just worked and everybody went, wow. And then it gets to a point where somebody does the technology, but also makes it super usable, super friendly. And that was the iPod, when the iPod came along. And it was the same with smartphones and, you know, all the rest of it. It just, that's the way technology works. So I think in 2024 with AI, we've been in the, oh, wow, the technology works stage, right? So I think it's fairly safe to say that in 2025, we'll start to move away from that kind of, oh, wow, isn't the technology impressive, to more, how are we going to make that usable? How are we going to integrate it into our workflows? How's it going to be more than just a gimmick? What are the UI elements going to be around that that kind of allow it just to become a part of what we do? And to be fair, it's a fairly safe bet to make, because actually Apple have already announced it and started to roll it out, so they're doing it. Microsoft have just done a massive conference where they're talking about how they're going to do it for enterprise, so I think it's a fairly safe thing. So what that will mean for, like, you and me and the stuff that we do, it'll be very much about, okay, so, you know, they suddenly want to do AI, you know, add an AI component into this user interface. How do we do that in a way where it feels seamless and is almost invisible, rather than at the moment, here's a bloody big chat box, you know, type in your thing in here. You know, it's got to be more subtle than that and more invisible than that. So that's my first prediction for next year.
Okay.
You agree with that, do you?
I do.
That's got your seal of approval.
Yeah, maybe. I don't want to be tarred by the same brush. No, that makes total sense. Yeah, as you say, it's kind of happening anyway. But in using AI within interfaces, I wasn't quite sure what you meant. But yeah, this kind of, it's not just like I'm going to go to this AI place and do some prompts to make a thing. It'll just become more part of the...
I'll give you a really good example of it, right? I don't suppose you're probably not running the latest beta for iOS software. Because you're not stupid like one. I am. Yeah, exactly. So I am, obviously. And now, you know, when you're in Messages, yep, right, and you want to create an emoji or add an emoji, yep, right, you go to the emoji picker, you type in the emoji you want, it narrows down the selection, you click on it and it adds it. Well, now, if you type in something that it doesn't have, it will use AI to auto-generate one for you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's exactly the same action you were doing previously, but instead of showing zero results, which is what it would have done if you'd said something like, for example, in that conversation where we were wishing Andy a happy birthday,
yeah,
and I was saying, oh, congratulations on retirement, and I put in birthday cake with the word 65 written on it.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, normally in the emoji picker, that would return nothing.
Yeah.
But instead, it created an emoji for me. So that's a really good example of integrating AI. I didn't have to go to a separate website like Kria or wherever else. It was just a part of the flow of what I was doing.
Mm. Very good. And yes.
Okay.
You've predicted something that's already happening. Well done, Paul. More of that. There will be more.
More of that. And we'll have to start doing it rather than just Apple doing it, if you know what I mean. Yeah, yeah. It'll become more on our level. Second one, to be honest, falls into the same category of things that are already beginning to happen. And that's AI agents. So, to just explain, if in case you don't know what AI agents are, Marcus, I mean, I know that you're really on top of AI news, so obviously you already know, but just let's pretend you don't for a moment. At the moment, when you ask AI to do something, it's pretty limited in what it can do. You have to give it very specific instructions, and it, you know, even if you give it like specific step one, step two, step three, step four, sometimes it just gets a little bit lost and you almost need to handhold it through each step. Right. First of all, create an outline for this blog post. Now write an initial draft for this blog post. Now apply my style to this blog post, and so on and so on. And you have to sit there taking it step by step. What an AI agent will do is it will be able to just basically A, work out the steps, and B, just go away and do it, affected by you. So a classic example is, I want to take my wife out to a restaurant for our anniversary, which is on the 8th of August. I want to spend roughly this amount of money, go find me somewhere and book it, right? And it can literally go and do all of that, right? It will open up a web browser, it will do the search, it will find relative number of restaurants. It might come back to me and ask a follow-up question like, do you fancy Italian or Chinese or whatever? And then it will go ahead and book that thing for you. So we are teetering on the edge of that. And in fact, Claude, which is one of the AI platforms out there, released a tool that actually does do that now, but it's convoluted to set up and is a bit of a pain in the ass. So that is where we're going to be getting at over the next year. And so we'll be able to do things, I think. In fact, there's a tool that does this already, which is a custom tool called Strella, S-T-E-L-L-A, I think it's called. And in this tool, basically, you can say, I want you to do some user interviews. Here are the questions that I want to cover, but feel free to ask follow-up questions or, you know, gain additional information. It goes away, arranges those interviews with you, holds those interviews with voice, right? Creates a transcript of them, and then extracts out of that a load of findings with highlights and common themes and that kind of stuff. Costs an absolute fortune. It's massively overpriced, in my opinion. But it does the job. I've watched a demo of it and they've talked me through it. And it creates personas and all kinds. Yeah.
How does it know who to contact? Who does it contact?
You give it a list of people to contact, okay. Right? And in fact, I don't think it does that bit yet. I think that's something that they're planning to do. But you get you at what they what where it is at the moment is you give them a, you give your participants a link. Say go to this link, and it creates a video chat pretty much like this.
And rather than it's rather than there's a human facilitating it, AI is doing
it. Yeah, and it's extracting all the insights and creating personas and all of that shit that goes alongside it.
Okay, that's quite clever.
That is quite clever. It was quite impressive. And obviously you can see how that potentially changes our role of like, you know, it doesn't do away with our role, but our role now becomes, okay, we have to set up that kind of stuff. We have to double check its results because it's, as I've said many times before, I don't know whether I said it on the podcast, but I've said it absolutely everywhere else. You got to treat AI like an intern. Mm-hmm. It'll screw up, you know.
That's my concern.
But yeah, it
I
could
think.
Do that.
It's like, surely, and I'm prepared to be, you know, told I'm wrong on this, but surely having a human facilitate an interview makes sense. That's when we're good. We can go, this person is telling me something of value that isn't part of the script, I agree. I know AI, by, you know, by definition, can kind of learn, but not the same way a human can.
No. I went in very cynical. I came out less cynical, but still somewhat cynical. Yeah. I've seen a tool like this before. And it wouldn't ask any follow-up questions. It would literally ask the questions you programmed into it.
Which would be great if you were doing 1,000 interviews. How useful
absolutely.
Would that be? But if you're just doing what we normally do, half a dozen or maybe... You know,
exactly. 10, yeah. this tool will ask follow-up questions. Are those follow-up questions going to be anywhere near as insightful as a person? Absolutely not, right? We will be sitting there looking at people's body language, or they'll make a huffy noise when they're, you know, upset about something. Or the classic one we've talked about many times when we used to do them in person, they'll go and close the door. Yeah. And you know they're going to say something juicy then, you know. It won't pick up on all that. So no, it's never going to be as good as a human, obviously, or at least not in 2025. I'm not willing to predict further ahead than that. But, you know, so that's AI agents. Yeah, pretty okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited by them. They're the thing out of everything on the list. That's the thing that I'm most excited about. This one I'm less sure about, and that's finally the maturing of AR and VR. So obviously this year there's been the release of Apple Vision Pro. There's Meta showing off this incredible Orion headset that I think costs something like $22,000 per headset that they create, and they're not actually selling them to the public yet, but are amazing. Yeah. 2025, we're probably, maybe, going to see the next generation from these suppliers, right? And if they can get the price down, and that's a big if, I think 2025, and this would be right at the tail end of 25, if it's in that year at all, then I think we might begin to see AR and VR being more than, I put mainstream here, I think that's an exaggeration, but being more than just a gaming tool or a specialist tool for, I think it will become more a part of our reality. So that would be interesting if that happened, but I'm kind of a little unsure about that.
I think you're right to be unsure, Paul. I don't think we're going to see that next year. I'm not going to buy a pair of AR VR glasses for a price that I think is reasonable next year. I think that's pretty unlikely.
Well, you say that. It depends on what you... There are many different levels of AR and VR, you see.
Because I want what the Apple ones do in a pair of glasses.
Yeah, but in
like
a normal
this.
Pair of glasses. Yeah, you're not going to get that next year. No. But for example, there is... Meta have done a deal with Ray-Ban and have glasses that are not dissimilar to the ones you're wearing now, maybe a little bit thicker frames, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Now, they don't have a heads-up display at the moment, so they're not actually AR, but they've got a camera built into them. They've got, you can talk to ChatGPT. It can look at what you're looking at and give you feedback on it and that kind of stuff, and it talks in your ear. Without the need for headphones on, but other people can't hear it. It's very clever. And if they could just put in a very basic text AR functionality into that, then that price is perfectly reasonable. That doesn't cost much more than a normal pair of glasses, to be honest. And we have that now, except without the AR stuff. So we might get something like that next year. But we're not going to get Apple Vision Pro as a pair of glasses walking around next year, no.
Yeah, for £500.
I don't want to overpromise in my predictions. This next one might be just wishful thinking on my part, but I've got I've just had a few conversations that have led me to this one. And this one is basically that hopefully we are going to see a stabilization of the UX job market next year, right? 2024 has been a pretty shitty year, okay? There have been massive layoffs in the industry across loads of different organizations. I've been talking to recruiters. They say it's gone dead as well for contractors. The agencies that I are part of, the agency academy I run, are all reporting that it's slowed down, and the freelancers are saying that it's slowed down as well. So it's been a pretty shitty year. My gut tells me, and a bit more than my gut actually, that I think things will pick up probably in the latter half of 2025, but I think it will be interesting to see how it happens. From conversations that I've had, I think it's... What happened is, right, is that as always happens with senior management, we've talked about this on the show before, they latch on to some new shiny thing, right? The latest shiny thing was UX. And so they all say, Apple have been successful with UX, so we must be as well. So they hire like one UX person, and then they expect miracles from that person, right?
Yep.
And of course, that person doesn't deliver it, the culture doesn't change, nothing changes, right? And so then they get frustrated and they lay off all these people because UX isn't working. But I think it then moves beyond that kind of attitude, and this slow realization happens of, yeah, okay, UX isn't something we can just ignore, right? And maybe we need to do it differently and we need to implement it properly, etc. So I'm hoping that towards the end of next year, we'll begin to see companies start going, okay, let's be sensible about UX. Let's start to implement it in a more robust way, resource it better, or set better expectations around what needs to be done in it. And I think we're going to see in-house teams start to be built up in a more robust way. Now, I think what that means for external teams, agencies and freelancers, that most, I suspect there'll be a bit of a shift. Certainly we'll still be using external suppliers, at least both of us hope they will. but it will be in more of a supporting role for at least some internal UX resource, rather than we're going to do all of their website, you know, externally, if that makes sense. So I think that's the direction things will go. I hope I'm right. But I'll be interested in your thoughts on this one, Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, next year's a bit of a worry, really. I mean, we've done all right this year, but it has been a bit bitty. It's not been great. But we've kind of been lucky and we've sort of making, you know, we're getting by making a small profit kind of thing. So that's great. I am concerned about next year. I don't think that's going to stop what I just described, but I'm concerned about big projects coming our way. And I hope you're right, because investment in, you know, internal jobs for UX just means general more investment, which means more for everyone. So yeah we'll see. It's not awful at the moment, but it's like, no, where are we going?
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're right. It's not, but we're very well established, right? Yes. There's a lot of people that aren't as well established, and for them, it really is awful at the moment. Mm. Yeah, I'm hearing all kinds of horror stories, but I think it will happen. But I think it will happen in the latter half of next year. Mm-hmm. I think everybody needs to get over. There's Trump getting into office. We've got a new government in the UK that's all got settled down. There's the kind of chaos around AI, I think, is a big factor as well. So there's a lot going on, and I'm hoping it will all stabilise a little bit next year. We'll see what happens.
One positive, one final point on that one, is that our pipeline is longer than it usually is. I'm not saying it's better. I'm not thinking, oh, these are all guaranteed. But it's there's a lot more. I don't know. People are putting out more feelers our way than they have been, say, 6 months ago. So that's a positive sign. You can tell that I'm hardly jumping up and down about it. But it's a reasonably good thing.
Yeah.
But I've got one prediction for 2024.
Oh, you've got one. Go for it.
Well, no, it's just something I saw the other day, which I thought, now that is brilliant. I don't know if you've seen. Have you seen the O2 Granny?
No.
Right. So O2 are using AI, and I'm hoping that we'll see more of this, or I'm saying we will see more of this.
Yeah.
Basically, they've got, they're using AI to basically waste the time of scammers. She's basically Daisy the AI Granny.
Ah, brilliant.
And it is brilliant. I recommend that you go to the O2 site, or I can give you a link to pop into the show notes, which shows you a video on what it does and how it works. And obviously that it's infinite. There you can have as many, not infinite, but, you know, you can have millions of AI grannies dealing with these scammers. So that's a good thing.
I'm always a bit torn over that kind of thing without going serious on it, because I know you were just being silly. Mm-hmm. But these people that scam the scammers and, you know, all of this kind of stuff, The trouble is, a lot of these people that are doing the scammers are basically working for crime syndicates and are kind of, you know, minimum wage jobs. They're not the real bastards in all of this.
I totally agree with that. But if what I guess my and this is probably wishful thinking, but the if it becomes the case that whenever somebody is phoning up to scam someone, they don't know whether they're going to be scammed back, it'll just stop. And other ways of scamming people will obviously be found. But if we can stop that, that would be a good thing. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, you're entirely right. So it's one last prediction, and then we shall move on from that, which is personalization. Everybody every year says next year is going to be the year of personalization. I'm quite interested in the ways AI can help with personalization. And I think that maybe we shall start to see some ways that the rest of us can reasonably integrate personalization into our sites without it becoming massively complicated or expensive. I mean, obviously, sites like Amazon have been doing personalization for years, but actually it's quite complicated from a technical point of view. And quite time consuming and quite expensive. And so I think AI will open up some interesting possibilities over the next year so that when people say hit your landing page, they go, oh, you've come from this referrer. Okay, well, let's mention that now in the headline, you know, and things like that. I can see that becoming a bit of an area. But we've talked endlessly about AI. Most of my predictions seem to be AI related. So I will move on from that. I want to change the next bit on you, Marcus, from what's in the show notes, because I had a really interesting conversation yesterday, and I thought it was a really good little story to tell.
Okay.
So I was going to talk about a terrible experience that I have with my local doctor, and just to give an example.
That sounds really bad. He had really cold hands.
he did. He was most inappropriate. I was going to talk about their terrible website, but instead I want to tell us I had a conversation with David from Ripple
who
mentioned.
I recommended.
So he runs a recruitment agency for designers and developers, basically.
Yep.
Really nice guy, very, very friendly, very helpful. Had a chat with him, and he was saying about how UI and UX can actually make things worse by making them easier. And I thought this was fascinating, right? He says that UX has basically broken the recruitment industry, right? I think that was the words he used. I don't want to misquote him, but I think that's what he said. His logic is very sound. He said all of these sites where jobs are listed have now made it so easy to apply for a job, right? You could basically add them to a basket and then just spam, you know, anything that looks reasonable. That essentially, whenever he posts a job ad now, he gets so many applicants, 99% of which are useless, and he has to work through all of those to find the 1% that are useful. Mm. Because people think, well, why the hell not? I might as well. It's only a press of a button. I might as well send, you know, apply to these jobs that I'm not really suited to. You know, you never know kind of attitude. And we go into this quite interesting conversation that there are times when you specifically want to make an experience harder to make somebody take it more seriously. And I've seen research done on this about like form completion, mm-hmm. that if you really want somebody to pay attention to a form, making the text smaller actually helps. And various little, actually inputting a little bit of friction into an experience actually is quite a good thing sometimes. And actually, I wish I could remember, there's a psychological trait as well, where if you make something harder and you have to put in a little bit more work. Oh, I know what it's called. It's the IKEA effect.
Oh, right, right.
If you have to assemble your own furniture, you place a little bit more value on that furniture than if it had come ready assembled, right? And so friction is a really interesting one. We're always obsessed as UX people with making things simpler and simpler and simpler, but that can backfire sometimes. And I just thought that was a brilliant story.
Very interesting point, Paul. I like that. It's a psychological angle on it. It's about designing the right interface or the right process doesn't necessarily mean the absolute simplest. I think the same applies with, this is a little bit of a jump, but if you're talking about making text easier, you can make it so simple that it loses some of its meaning.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. Mm-hmm. So but actually, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, it might be harder to read this particular sentence, but at the end of it, you will be better informed than if it was simpler. And the same thing applies.
Equally, you can strip out all of the personality of text by simplifying it overly.
Absolutely.
There is definitely a balance to be made there. So, yeah.
Good story,
Paul. It was a good little conversation. He caught me off guard with it, but I do actually agree with him.
How's he doing? I've not spoken to him for ages.
Seems to be doing all right. A lot of the thing I was saying about the future of the industry it was from that conversation with him. He had some really good insights into the way it was going, and you know, he's seeing a beginning to see a pickup in the recruitment of in-house teams. So that's where that thing about, well, maybe we're moving a little bit more in-house. I mean, I've heard it from other places as well, but you know, that seems to be the direction it was going. But I don't think he's had the best year either for the same reasons. It's all just been a bit of a kind of slowdown, isn't it? Anyway, let's talk about a couple of, three articles just to wrap things up. All of these will be in the show notes, obviously. So if you go to boag.world/009, you'll be able to get all the links that we've talked about in the show, all those apps, etc. But the three articles I've got, first one is the one I think that you were talking about, Marcus,
yes.
Was it? Or was it the second one?
First one.
Yeah. So the challenges and opportunities of generative AI in UX design. So that very much picks up on what I was saying earlier about, you know, generative AI for imagery and various other things. And it was a very balanced article, I felt, that kind of gave both the pros and the cons and asked some questions about how AI fits into the work we're doing. But you obviously found it an interesting one, Marcus.
Well, it's particularly from the fact that all I ever said, and this is an exaggeration, but all it's like, oh, AI is great. We're all going to not have anything to do because AI is going to be our saviour. And I'm like, not sure about that. So it was quite interesting to read something that was pointing out all of the potential pitfalls of using AI and interacting with AI-created things.
Yeah.
It is worth a read.
Definitely chat. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about everything that's in it. It's because the idea is you go and read it yourself. So check that one out.
Yeah.
The second one is AI features must solve real user problems. And this really builds upon that first one of say, you know, and what I was saying earlier about the life cycle that a new technology goes through.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, AI, I've had huge fun with AI over the last year and it's been absolutely brilliant. And I've integrated it into everything I do. But that's because I love technology. I love playing with technology. I love new stuff. I don't think it has yet moved to that more mature place of solving real people's problems. And this article did a really good breakdown of that. And, you know, about how, yeah, it's been great for productivity, but, you know, it's largely at the novelty stage. It needs to be much better integrated into the user experience. So it very much builds on that topic that I was talking about earlier and is worth checking out as well. And then the final one is a critique is not a review of many other thoughts about overlooked practices. And this one grabbed my attention because I thought it was quite an insightful look at the difference between critiquing somebody's work and reviewing somebody's work. And when I went...
Did it take you back to design school?
It did, yeah. I was literally just about to say that. That, you know, when we were at design school, we always used to have design critiques. But those have very much fallen out of fashion now. But they're incredibly valuable in terms of helping you take the design onto the next stage and to evolve it and improve it. And I do worry that a lot of designers are primarily, especially these days, with since we're often working from home, we are designing by ourselves. There is not that collaborative working relationship. And a lot of designers don't have anybody that's kind of looking at what they do and providing feedback. And I think that's something that's lacking from the industry. So that's a really good article to check out as well. All right, Marcus, let's wrap up at that point. But have you got a Christmassy joke? Because remember, this is a Christmas show.
No, I haven't. I probably should have, but I haven't. And it's too late now.
Yeah.
And this one's got a UK bias. So anyone outside the UK went and have a clue what I'm on about. But I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
They'll probably be able to work it out. So as I get older, I find I only need three shops. Specsavers, Boots and Greggs. My life is just specs and drugs and sausage rolls.
I like that one. That's good.
Which is about right, really.
Yeah, it is. It's funny because it's true. All right, so I asked AI because we've talked a lot about AI in this episode, and we've maybe challenged whether AI is good or not. So I literally, just when you said you didn't have a Christmas joke, I literally said to AI, write me a Christmas joke. So you ready for it?
I'm ready.
What did Santa say when he stepped in a big puddle?
What did Santa say when he stepped in a big puddle?
It must have rained last night.
Oh dear, that's even worse than my level.
I think AI, you've just proved you're not there yet.
Yeah.
If you can't tell a joke at least as good as Marcus, then that's pretty poor.
That's the benchmark. That's the what's the low.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark. Anything below, no.
Right, okay, thank you very much for listening to the show, and thank you to all of those who've come back and started listening since we've returned. It is hugely appreciated. This will be our last show for this year. We'll kick off again in 2025. But until then, have a really lovely holiday. I hope you get a bit of a break, and we'll see you in the new year.
What he said.